Welcome, everybody, to the Leverage Podcast. I have no fucking idea what episode we're on. Somewhere in the 40s or 50s, I would guess. But I'm super excited because we have an awesome guest on today. His name is Marcus Oki, and I've known Marcus. Well, first, welcome, Marcus. Thanks for coming.
Hey, how are you all doing? Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I guess we met when? At the 21 convention, like 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah, I think it was even longer than that now.
Yeah, was it the one in Orlando or London? Or I can't remember exactly.
It was the one in London, and I remember it because I had to go and present on the topic of charisma. And it's really difficult when the guy introducing you is more charismatic than you are, and you have to give a presentation on that. So,
Who was that guy?
I don't know. You're wonderful, darling.
No, I had the pleasure to introduce you that time. That was great. So that was shit. That was almost 4 years ago. You're right. Summer of 2012. And Didn't see you for a while, but we reconnected recently down at Sasha Daygame's Direct Dating Summit on Relationships a couple weekends ago. And that was an amazing event. Marcus, in my opinion, had the best talk of probably the entire weekend. Not to blow any smoke or suck any dick, but literally I think it was the best talk. And also, like, I was just, it was funny because when you talked about the course that you were going to do on creating instant connections, one of the first things that occurred to me right when, you know, we reconnected in the lobby there, I was like, damn, this guy is like super open. I was just really impressed at how easy you were to talk to. And just how easy it was to like have a conversation, like you're very inviting. I'm like, I'm sure that's not a coincidence. Especially since obviously I know what you do. And then when you eventually talked about, you know, the connection triggers course that you're launching, I'm like, all right, well, that makes sense. He's probably using his Jedi tricks on me, which is awesome. Because I'm always using Jedi tricks on people too, for the greater good, of course. You know, yeah, like I said, it was just great. And your partner, Johnny, was awesome as well. We're going to try to have him on the call next week so he can share some awesome tidbits. But, you know, everyone who's listening, this is a treat coming all the way from London. So thanks so much for being here. Want to give the guys just a quick background on kind of like how you got into being a charisma coach and, you know, anything else relevant to your story?
Sure. Well, first of all, guys, once again, thank you for having me. To just jump right in, I ended up teaching charisma because all the other good jobs were taken. I started way back in 2003, and I got into the whole dating movement. And I ended up working with a lot of companies in the scene, companies like Real Social Dynamics, PUA Training, and various others in between, and worked with a lot of great guys, taught a lot of their trainers. And I really was interested in not so much the dating aspect, because I saw a lot of guys were coming on training to improve their dating lives, but really they were also interested in developing themselves and developing how they could connect with other people. So that's what I focused on. And when I started out, I didn't really have any role models or anything like that as such. I just had one guy who worked in a movie theater with me who was insanely charismatic. And like any good person in self-improvement, I remember the fundamental rule. And that is when you find somebody who's doing something better than you, learn from them. They've got so much to teach you. Now, unfortunately, this guy couldn't break down what he was doing. But he was the kind of guy that when we're in the movie theater, we were selling popcorn. So it wasn't a great job, like a lot of sticky episodes. Anyway, moving on. When people would come into the cinema, they would join his line. He'd get huge queues, huge lines, and everyone would be laughing, and they'd line up just to see this guy. And he was engaging, but he wasn't entertaining. And a few weeks after that, I introduced him to to one of my friends, and she said, "Oh, he's so charismatic." I was like, "Damn it, I want to learn how to do that." So that's what set me off on the journey, and 15 years later, here I am, and I'm still learning myself every day.
That's cool. You got into the whole scene a couple of years before I did. I got in like 2006, 2005, 2006. So yeah, I'm sure we could sit here and talk shop about all that nonsense.
All the scandals.
All the what? The scandals, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny because one thing that, you know, because we're talking about connections and we're talking about, you know, maybe we'll share some connection triggers later on the call or whatnot. But what I really loved about, you know, what you sent me in the email, it's like sometimes you can create those connections and it's just random. Like it's just luck.
Yeah.
And we run a workshop, you know, with the guys in this group. It's called the Complete Man Workshop. And we talk about basically everything you need to be like an awesome dude, appealing to women, appealing to other guys, you know, just someone you would want to meet. Mm. And one of those things, you know, that an awesome dude has, is they embody, or not they embody, they have a vast background of a lot of different subjects. They're well-read, they're well-traveled. You know, they do a lot of interesting things. They have an interesting life, right? Because you can't fake the funk. If you're boring, you're not going to really be able to connect with people. But the more places you go, you know, the easier it is to connect. And I can't tell you how many times, like, just traveling has paid off. Like, you know, spending time in Budapest, spending time in Belgrade, spending time in Dublin, right? Because whenever you meet someone from there, and they're here in LA, and they're like, oh, I'm from Budapest. You're like, oh, no way. You know, and you say, what part of Budapest? District 5? And they're like, whoa, you know Budapest? Like, you actually know where that is? Because most people are like, what the fuck is Budapest? Because Americans are very clueless when it comes to Eastern European geography. And you create those instant connections. And, you know, it's cool because you can obviously, you can study a ton of stuff, but that would take a long time, right? So when you and Johnny were going over this idea that you had where you kind of, you know, studied and boil them down, I thought that was really cool. And I'm like, damn, I wish I was doing that with them. So can you tell us a little bit more about like how you and Johnny came to that idea, the sort of like maybe some of the brainstorming sessions you have, just kind of walk us through like what happened with all that, the story behind it.
Sure. Well, you know, I like what you said there about, you know, you meet somebody sometimes and you do just hit it off. A friend of mine speaks more than one language, which is rare for anyone in England. And what happened is he'd be talking to a Spanish girl, for example, in English, and he knows she's Spanish, but he won't leap into Spanish talking to her. But, you know, halfway through the night he will, and it just re-energizes the conversation. Suddenly gears have been switched and they love each other like on a much deeper level. She loves him on a much deeper level. And usually, yeah, that it's kind of luck. I don't know if you remember The Legend of Zelda, but you'd walk around like the video game uncovering the map. Yeah, right. Uh-huh. Okay. So you get the map and it'd all be question marks. And then as you explored, the question marks would disappear and you kind of have a better view of what's going on. It's like that with people. When you meet somebody for the first time, you kind of turn up with a blank canvas and they turn up with a blank canvas, and your conversation, if it's going well, if you're connecting, you'll be painting in your picture to show them of who you are, and they'll be doing the same. And once in a while, you find out you both have the same painting style, right? You find out maybe you're born in the same city, or you know that person, you know, you met in Bucharest or Budapest or wherever it is, and that accelerates the level of connection that you have. It deepens the connection. So Johnny and I both knew about this. And so Johnny's my, I've got to say my business partner, right? Because it does sound a bit like ominous, like he's my partner. What does that mean? Business, right? Those transactions are financial, not in the bedroom. Anyway, so, sorry, I'll get back on topic. Right, so I've just shaved my head, by the way. So it does look a bit unusual because I'm like a bald-headed man now. And yeah, I just decided to shave it to see what would happen. And I was walking down the beach with Sasha next to me, and we did look like a gay couple. So I'm very aware of it. It's only day two in the shaving right now. So anyway, so getting back on topic, my apologies. We were looking deeply into each other's eyes, Johnny and I, and we were talking and saying, hey, this happens to me sometimes. And he was like, yeah, this happens to me too. And we realized that most of the time it was down to serendipity. You know, it was really down to luck if that would happen. And I think we've all had moments in our lives where that has happened. So I was very keen to know, could that be broken down? And if it could be broken down, could it be learned? And if it could be learned, could it be applied? Could it be taught? And that's what led us on the journey. So imagine it almost like the model, the system, almost like a pyramid. So
almost what, a pyramid?
Oh, yeah, almost like a pyramid. And at the bottom, you've got the fundamental principles. These are like timeless things that never change. You know, if you're in a place with a different language, same still applies. You know, if everybody knew all the connection triggers in all the world, the same would still apply. Without these fundamental basics, you're not building on a strong foundation. So a couple of the really important ones that we realized is, like, for example, when you go to school or college or university, you get taught how to speak. You get taught how to read, you get taught how to write, but you don't get taught how to listen. And listening is such a massive, massive deal. It's huge. Now, it's like, well, how do you get taught to listen?
What did you say? Just kidding.
Yeah. Oh, man. I've just shrunk an inch now. I'm like, oh, God. All right. So literally, when you're there and somebody's talking to you, as you should be now, right now, Robbie, right? As somebody's talking to you or talking with you, what I usually do is I will be present. I'll clear my mind, because we've all got that chatterbox, that voice in our head that gives us guidance, that tells us how we're doing. But it also gets in the way as somebody's talking to us. You know, the voice might come on and say, oh, God, this is so boring, or his English accent is really annoying, or any number of things, right? Or the voice might come on and be very encouraging. Oh, this is a great course. I'm going to sign up for it, or whatever it might be. Now, if you're having that voice going on in your head, you can't really have a good conversation with the person in front of you, because you've got two conversations going on at the same time. So the first trick is to flood your senses and quieten the voice down. What I mean by that is...
Wait, before you said quiet the voice down, you said what, flood your senses?
Oh, I'm never going to repeat that again. Yeah, it's to flood your senses with what's going on around you. So the voice comes on in your mind, basically when you start observing things and judging stuff. Like, this is good, this is going well, this isn't so good, whatever. It causes the voice to fire up. So a little exercise you can do, as you're all sitting around, hopefully you're sitting around, if anyone's driving right now, you're going to crash. Be careful. Your journey home has just got more exciting. Okay. So you can do this after the call, or have a little go right now. But first thing to think of is to, as you're sitting, look, keep your head stationary. So you're not lifting your head up. You're not moving your head in any way. You're keeping your head level. I want you just to look up with your eyes until the ceiling meets the wall, like in your room, wherever you are. If you're outside, adventurous, do it with the horizon. Okay. But look up so your gaze, your eyes are focusing on that point where the ceiling meets the wall, and hold that gaze there for a bit. Now, after a very short period of time, you'll start to feel tension in your eyeballs. Keep holding it. Now, ideally, you want to do this for about 30 seconds, 60 seconds. Eventually, when you can't take it anymore, or after 60 seconds, relax your eyes back to normal. And notice how your blind vision, the vision at the sides of your head, expands. So if everyone's doing that now, that's great. But if you want to try it later, that's cool as well. Once you get used to just allowing your vision to expand, the next thing you do is that you allow your hearing to expand. So if you listen to all the sounds around you right now, you can probably pick up, you know, 4 or 5. But if you close your eyes and really focus on the sounds around you, take a moment, maybe 30 seconds, just to listen out for all the different sounds. So let's just all do that. Have a bit of silence. Ready? Okay, so anyone coming on the call now will think, what the hell's going on there? So even in that little space of time, if anyone noticed, like when they started, they might have heard 4 or 5 sounds. the more you do it, the more upper little sounds creep in. You might hear the air conditioning unit come in, or if you're in the north of the country, the heater crank out. You may hear things going on outside your building. And what happens is the full spectrum of sounds starts coming into your consciousness. Now, the final thing you do is find where you're sitting right now or standing, whatever you're doing, and start being aware of your body. Be aware of how your forehead feels right now. Mine's bald, right? Find out how it feel. Go into your conscious mind and feel what it feels like to feel your feet in your shoes, your butt in the chair, the way your shoulders feel, the way your right hand feels. Let your consciousness travel up and down your body. Just scan up and down. Now, the more you start doing this and combining all three of those together, the more you'll find that the voice takes a back seat. So, what I'd encourage you all to do is practice this, because when the voice falls silent, you're in a brilliant place to listen really readily. You're almost like fertile ground for them to chuck seeds into, right? So, as you're talking to the other person, sorry, go on.
No, I love that exercise. Do you do that? How often do you do that? Or is it just kind of like a natural thing for you where you don't even have to consciously do it anymore?
Okay. Yes and yes. So the answer is the first time I did it, I practiced it maybe 4 or 5 times. Then it seemed to make sense. And then I just do it when I had a bit of idle time. Let's say I was in a library or sitting on a park bench, a couple of times a week. Then it just becomes second nature very quickly. It's not something you have to practice like a Buddhist monk to do. You can get it very fast. But just going through those three steps, visual, auditory, and how your body feels. Kinesthetic, right? So once your mind's quiet, as the other person starts speaking to you, listen to what they're saying. See what images pop up in your mind's eye. See what feelings you have about what they're saying. So, for example, if they say they were driving in a car earlier and they almost had an accident, like you accident, it might be something in the kitchen, like you dropped a load of flour. You might be thinking of cars. Whatever it is, whatever pops up, that now gives you things to talk about. So have a think. Next time you're in a conversation with somebody, have a think. Are you doing most of the talking, or are they doing most of the talking? That is the key thing. You want to be doing the least amount of talking. But as you all probably know, at the start of the conversation, you have to get things going a bit. You have to get a bit of traction going. But as soon as they start talking back to you, ease off the gas. That's the key.
Yeah, I think that's a big mistake that a lot of guys will make, especially when, you know, they haven't had a ton of conversations, especially with women. They'll be so eager to kind of fill in those silences, which will kill all the sexual tension. And it'll also kind of kill any chances of the woman investing in you. And if she's not investing in the conversation, she's not going to feel like the conversation's worth anything, and she's not going to feel like you're worth anything.
Right.
That's not a harsh way to put it. But I think that part is key.
Well, there's such a paradox because, there's this idea of, be a good listener, but at the same time, I tried doing that and then I found I wasn't talking. So, and then the conversation fell apart again. So I think the key thing is just to put the initial emotion in, inject a bit of emotion. You're looking, the transition of a conversation is that moment where they start talking back to you. That's when you know, bam, you got it. That's when you can start dropping in the first conversation triggers as well.
Okay, cool.
So that's one of my favorite phrases. Tell me more. Such a good phrase. Elaborate. Okay. So you start the conversation off. You walk up, you say hi or whatever. And a really good thing to do is to, if you can, share a token. A token can be anything at all, anything that has value. So I'll give you an example of this. I'm staying in a property in Mexico right now. I'm secretly not in London. I'm in Mexico still. I'm hiding out like a fugitive, like Robbie was when he was smuggling drugs through Europe, Budapest, Bucharest, all those places. So why I'm here, sorry, I was I wasn't supposed to bring that up, was I? So while I was here, this place is like a gated property. It's really nice. And I'm staying here for free, which is wonderful. It's important to have really good connections with people because they open doors everywhere. They create more opportunities in your life. And I was very lucky. I flew out here business class as well with a ticket I didn't buy because I have a good connection with somebody at the airport. So building up these connections is really paramount. And I was reading recently about a story of a famous business CEO. I can't remember his name. I do apologize. But it was in, I think it was in Forbes in the last 2 weeks. And basically what it was this CEO was saying how he had an exam with a professor about building a business. And he walks in and on the exam day, the question is, you know, I've taught you loads in the last 12 weeks. But what it really comes down to is, what is the cleaning lady's name of this building? And the CEO said, I failed because I didn't know. And what it drove into him then was to learn the lesson of knowing everybody, being fascinated by everybody, being curious about everybody. So where I was coming into this building, there's a doorman there. And he opens the door and I had a crate of beer under my arm. And he's like, oh, you guys are going to party. That's awesome. And I said, thanks, dude. And I walked off and I thought, I bet he wants a beer. Like, even though he's not allowed to drink a beer and all these sorts of things. So we got to the party and then I went back down and I took him a beer. And you know what? He loved me. From that moment, he's like, oh my God, thanks so much, dude. That little token created something deeper between us, right? Because it was something of clear value. And it doesn't define the relationship. It just accelerates the connectivity. So every time I come in and out of this property, he's like, Marcus, how are you doing? Anything I can do to help? Like, best customer service ever. And it cost me like 50 cents, right? Because beer's cheaper. It's Corona, right? But never mind. So maybe that was an insult. He's like, oh shit, I got to try harder. He gave me a Corona. So that's one tiny little example. Now, anything that you have is of value, right? The cheesy thing back in the day was to take a bracelet off your wrist and give it to somebody you like. You have to do it for a reason, though. You can't just like, hey, here's a beer. I mean, that's great and everything, but if you give a reason why you're giving it, that adds extra value to the token you're giving. So if you say, for example, you know, like, dude, you're at work today. That's not fair. You deserve to party. So I'm giving you this. That makes that token more valuable. One of the most precious things I own is a little bracelet on my wrist. It's made of string. But if you see it, you think, oh, what's that worth? Maybe like 5 cents. But the backstory is it was given to my friend when she was in Thailand going through this really difficult time. A Buddhist monk who's not allowed to touch women came up to her, and whether he was a pervert or not, I'm not sure, but he touched a woman, right? And he said, I can see you crying. I'm going to give you this blessing cord. And he gave her this blessing cord and spent an hour blessing this cord, put it on her wrist. And it traveled with her everywhere, all around the world. And one day, you know, we were having a real heartfelt moment. And she said, you know, this has been with me everywhere. Now I want you to have it. Right. So that blessing cord, that bit of string around my wrist, has now got a story attached to it. Stories make things valuable. So when you're giving somebody a token, give a backstory as well. That's what gives it the value. That's what makes it sincere. It's like when you give a compliment. If you just say, hey, nice shoes, it's not sincere. But if you give a reason why you're saying, no, you know, you have nice shoes, whoa, you actually make me want to be a woman so I could wear high heels like that. You know, okay, I do at the weekends. Even if it's crazy, right? No, if you say, hey, you have the best style on the beach. What you're doing wearing high heels on a beach is terrible because you're just going to sink into the sand. But I just wanted to come and say hi. That makes it more genuine because it's real, right? So attach a reason. Now, what that does, yeah, it shifts you up to like the level two where you can start dropping in the level two connection levers. But does that give you a bit of an idea? At this stage.
So, yeah, that's great. When you were telling the part about the token, and when you say story gives things value, you should have seen Carly's face. She was like praying to baby Jesus or something.
No, I was saying he's so awesome.
Right, you're like, he's so awesome. Like the motion you're making.
Wow, tell me more.
Tell me more. And it's so true. And that's another skill that's so important, which is storytelling, you know, to build things up and to give, you know, whatever that the thing of value it was, to tell that story, it's yeah. night and day, you know, versus if you just have a you know, a little thing on your wrist and someone's like, so why are you wearing that? Like, oh, a friend gave it to me. That's boring, obviously, right? But the way you told yeah. the story was like, wow, that's so cool. And it showed so much about you, like, you know, you're into Buddhism and you've been to crazy places and women like you because they give you bracelets, right? Maybe a stupid one.
Right.
But nonetheless, like, you can say so much about yourself in a story without bragging versus just coming out and saying it. So,
absolutely.
I love that. I don't want to get too off topic with like storytelling or anything, but how much does that have any sort of play when it comes to connection triggers and connection? Is there anything you want to touch on with that?
Well, you know, the connection triggers themselves are all ways of instantly accelerating your social value. Storytelling is one of them, but storytelling is a fundamental skill. It's like one of the building blocks, right?
Right.
So, you know, I think a great thing to do with storytelling, I mean, storytelling is it's like the finger of God, right? It allows you to create value in everything. A big mistake guys make is when they're like, they buy a girl a drink, you know, it's like this, oh, I'm not going to buy a girl a drink. It's like, oh, because you're doing it to get something in return, right? That's when you're being like a chump, right? But if you create that backstory of like why you bought the drink, you know, why it was so important, again, that's what makes it valuable. That's what makes it not like a cheesy move as such. But going back to storytelling, the easiest way to get good is if anyone's got any nieces or nephews or maybe like really little brother or sister, what was going on in your family, eh? What you can do is if you can tell a story that captivate a 7-year-old, you know you're good. Right. If they're like, this is boring, right? I'm going to go and watch Dora the Explorer. You fail. Right. So the skill is, can you tell a story that will captivate a child? And telling a story, it doesn't have to be about the words you use. You don't have to be a master of words, but it's how you bring it to life. Are you interested in what you're talking about? You know, I could tell that same story about the cord around my wrist and be, you know, like, it was a bit of string and Buddhist gave it to her. It was great. No, it's the voice tonality. It's just depressing. Yeah, right. I sound like that guy from Wayne's World, the roadie. But anyway, movie reference. So just having a really monotonous voice tone is something that will kill a story, unless you're acting out a character. So one of the big ways that we convey emotion is through our voice. And the goal here is not to change your voice. It's not to like take singing lessons so you can speak in different voices like that, right? That's just a tiny thing. The goal is to, can I talk in a happy way? Can I talk in a sad way? And I think you all can. It's just a little bit of practice. So the most powerful emotion to inject into people, that sounds a bit rude, is positivity, right? Negativity is also very powerful, but I'd recommend not using it at this stage. So no, it's true. It's true. You can put a bit of tension in those conversations. It works wonderfully. So what you can do is when you're buying your next Starbucks coffee, it tastes like shit. I don't know. I don't see the appeal of Starbucks at all. But anyway, when you're buying your coffee, speak with a smile, right? You'll know if you're doing it right because the other person will smile back. And if they don't smile back, keep smiling until they smile back. Once you get good at that,
right?
Sorry, John.
Until they call the cop.
but smile at the cop until he smiles back. Right. Jail time doesn't end your practice. So yeah, and you know, if you're chatting to girls, do the same. If you're chatting to I think the most fun one are when you just talk to miserable guys and you're just like, they've just got the face of misery, like, and just hold your smile. It's really good practice for you. And it'll also give you a real focus on how well you're doing with your own ability to project emotion. In fact, can I share a little exercise with everyone?
Yes, please.
Okay. Right. So another really so simple exercise. Go to a mall. We call them shopping centers in London, which sounds hideously British. But go to a mall and find someone who looks bored, right? They're probably folding clothes. If anyone's done that as a job, I have. It's rubbish, right? So walk up to them, and your line is, you have to say, you look so bored. But you have to do it in a way that makes them react positively. If you say it in a way that sounds boring in any way, they will react negatively, because they think you're cussing them. If you're doing it in a way that's upbeat, they will laugh. So you might say, for example, you might exaggerate a bit and say, you look so bored. That will get that will get a different reaction to, you look bored. Which,
I'm bored. Right.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, you won't get beaten up for doing it. You're just, the worst reaction you'll get is like a roll of the eyes. But it's really good for testing out how skillful you are with your tonality. Right? That's the test. That's the benchmark. So if you can go up to somebody and say something negative and they still respond positively, you know you've cracked it.
Yeah, I like that.
Cool. Still. So, yeah, so storytelling. Wrap what you're doing with emotion. Smile as you talk, pausing as well. You were talking about silence. A guy who doesn't know how to hold silence. Silence is really important. I realize I'm talking so fast right now. I probably sound like I don't know how to hold silence, but I do. It'd just be a rubbish conference call if I held silence all the time, though, right? So I apologize. Right. So your silence is really where you find yourself. Now, I don't mean to sound all deep there, but basically when you're talking to somebody and you hold silence, any anxiety that you've got in you at that time, or any comfort as well, will show itself. If you feel a bit nervous, you'll feel it in that pause, like, that's what it are like. That's why mine manifests as. It manifests as a ghost for some reason. But it's like that feeling in my chest, right? If you get that feeling come up, and that happens to all of us, focus on your breathing. Focus on breathing in through the nose and then out through the mouth. And whenever you get any tension like that in your body, breathing is what clears it out. So that's a good little exercise as well, a good little meditation to do when you're chatting to people, because your ability to hold silence is what encourages them to start pouring information into you. And it also helps you become a really good listener.
Right. Yeah. Silence is golden, they say, at the movie theaters anyway.
Yeah.
So here's a question that I'm sure a lot of people are going to want to know. It's kind of like the token question, what do I do when I run out of shit to say? Can we talk about that a little bit?
I think you should kill yourself.
I was planning on doing that anyways.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, not yet. Okay. So that was an example, by the way, of a negative emotion spike. But I'll come on to that later. Okay. So when you run out of things to say, take risks. The very last thing you want to be doing, right? That time does happen when we run out of things to say. And what you do is at least introduce yourself. If you can't think of anything, just go, I'm TJ, by the way. Right, or I am Sherban. I have a bald head like Marcus too, right? Just throw that thing in there, because what that will do is that encourages them to speak back.
Right.
You need the back and forth.
I really like that. But take risk. That's good, because that's kind of like the point of the conversation, where it's going to go one of two ways. It's either going to go on and it's going to be good, or it's going to end, right?
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of expediting things, right? I don't want to sit and have like a boring small talk conversation when I could be having an awesome conversation. So I want to get there as soon as possible. Obviously, I don't want to scare the person away by like taking too big of a risk, But I think it's always better to err on the side of too big of risks than not enough risks, because the worst thing you can be, in my opinion, is boring, right?
So agreed.
I'd rather be looked at as the guy who, you know, made an awkward comment than the boring guy, because at least I'm remembered.
Right. I mean, something I would drill into everybody is risk-taking is sexy. Risk-taking is sexy.
You have Carly's approval there, too.
Wow.
Any more examples of just different ways, you know, we can take risks in conversations, you know, with someone new that we just met? Maybe we don't have a lot of rapport. Just some, you know, quick tips on that.
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, the big thing about risk taking is it's not about jumping out of your comfort zone. There's this whole thing, I think, in self-improvement circles where it's like, get out your comfort zone. And I don't know why I said that in American accent. I'm sure they do it in other parts of the world as well. Like maybe in Nigeria, get out of your comfort zone. It is very good. Like, I don't know, right? But the thing is, your comfort zone is a circle. And the thing about your comfort zone is great because it's really comfortable. I love it. It's nice. And then to leap out of your comfort zone, that's to do something really big. Like, I don't know, for somebody jumping out of a plane with a parachute might be a leap out of their comfort zone, especially if they're the pilot. Loads of people are thinking, well, how's this plane steering itself now? But very few people lean into their comfort zone. And leaning into the comfort zone is where all the best risks happen. Leaning is when you're not making a show and dance about it. You're being really subtle and you're getting the butterflies coming up in your stomach maybe. And it's just a little bit awkward. So you're not crashing the car. You're just leaning into it. And, you know, I'll give you an example. The leaning in is going to be different for every single person. So for me, leaning in when I first was starting out was walking into like a coffee shop, for example, ordering my coffee. And by the way, I started out real social introvert here. So this is like level zero. And pulling my hand out of my pocket and making like a gun and saying, this is a robbery. Give me free coffee. Right. That for me was a push. Like that was awkward. I was leaning into my comfort zone. Had I taken a banana and thrown it at the girl behind the counter, that would have been leaping out of my comfort zone. Now the adrenaline is taking me. So you don't want to be surging through adrenaline when you're doing it. You just want to feel a little bit uncomfortable.
Gotcha.
Okay, and so go for it.
No, go ahead.
Oh, no. Okay, I better say something. I was just stalling for time, really. Okay, no. So here's a good way to do it, something that's very safe. As you're moving through life, life is movement, right? So as you're walking around, look for things that you would use that in a way that society prescribes as good. So, for example, a chair, a park bench you sit on, right? A stair rail you use to steady yourself as you walk down the stairs. Careful, Mr. No Balance. You know, like a shopping cart is something you push to put your groceries in. You probably can see where I'm going with this. Like, ride on the shopping cart, slide down the stair rail, jump and lie on the park bench. Just do little things like that. That if somebody, the perfect thing is if somebody looked at you, they would make this sound. Ready? It's this sound. Did you all get that? Just a. It's not like, hey, what are you up to? It's. That's it.
That sounds so weird.
It's a tutting sound. It's like, that would be even more. They're tutting under their breath. If they saw you, they'd go, oh dear. And then, yeah, like that.
What a.
You know, if you pulled out a gun and shot someone, they're not going to be like, oh dear. They're going to be like, oh my God, right? That's too far. Okay, just a little dance with negativity, a little dance with being judged. And as you get better at leaning, your circle grows bigger, right? Your comfort zone gets bigger and bigger, and to the point where doing more crazy risk-taky stuff isn't scary anymore. One of my personal favorites is when you're in a clothing shop and there's a girl looking at a rail of clothing. Go around the other side and stick your head through. So just as they pull the clothes apart, you go, that will create an emotional spike, and that will take a big fucking risk. but it'll also make you completely different from every other single person in the whole world.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Saying things that you probably shouldn't say is a good one. In answer to the question as well, when you run out of things to say, I like to break the fourth wall a bit, go a bit Deadpool. So as you're chatting and you run out of things to say, talk about that, go, oh my God, I've completely run out of things to say. You know, this has only happened to me 18 times today already. So last time I just ran away. This time I'm not sure what to do. I'm hoping you're going to chime in and say something really cool right now. Just waiting any moment now. Yeah, no, you haven't. You've walked the other way and left me. Okay. But yeah, give an audio commentary of what you're thinking. Like that's a really good thing to do.
You